This week on Indian Times. This year, the laws that deeply affect Indian country, such as the Violence Against Women Act, or VAWA, and now the Indian Child Welfare Act, or ICWA, may be misunderstood by not only the lawyers, but by the general public. The United States Supreme Court this week heard the case Adoptive Couple versus Baby Girl, which concerns the return of a 3-year-old girl to her Cherokee Nation member father. But what is the valid argument? University of Oklahoma law professor Tiawagi Helton, who is of Cherokee descent, points out it's not racial, it's legal.
I understand our discomfort with talking about race in this context because the Indian Child Welfare Act is not only intended to protect Indian children in custody proceedings. Obviously, we emphasize the best interests of the child. Hopefully, we do that in any custody proceeding. But for a very long time, the United States and local governments made real efforts to break up Indian families, and that was done through relocation programs in the 1950s, moving Indians out of tribal communities to urban centers and the like, and promoting blind adoptions where Native children were adopted out to non-Native families and their parents couldn't identify them or figure out where they had gone. And so in 1978, to address those problems, Congress passed the Indian Child Welfare Act, and it was specifically aimed at not only repudiating those past policies, but trying to undo some of the damage of those past policies. And also, what we saw in many state court proceedings was that the court would say the best interest of the child includes getting them into middle-class suburban lifestyles. And so if a child had a chance to live with grandparents or an aunt or some part of their extended family, but they would be doing so on tribal lands and perhaps in an impoverished community, the court would say that's not in their best interest. Instead, their best interest is to go with this couple who very much wants an adopted child and will give them, you know, a sort of standard American suburban upbringing. So those best interest decisions had real consequences for keeping Native children in their cultural context. And then when those children grow up, they know intensely that they are not like the people around them. They can tell by their skin color, and they have memories very often of what life was like before they were adopted out. And so the Indian Child Welfare Act is intended to address two problems. One, to address the needs of the Indian child herself or himself, to make sure that that child is having her best needs addressed and satisfied, but to also make sure that that child has an opportunity to stay close and with family, if possible, and to stay in a cultural context so that when they grow up, they'll have some sense of identity that connects them with their people. But the statute also very clearly is intended to undo those policies that were anti-tribal, policies that were intended to break up tribal communities. And so the statute's not only aimed at protecting the individual child, it's also aimed at protecting tribal communities so that they can thrive and stay strong where possible.
The Indian Child Welfare Act could be seen as the reaffirmation of sovereignty.
We have this long tradition of acknowledging a legal status for tribal groups. Women during the time of the Equal Rights Amendment weren't acknowledged as an entity themselves, and people of African descent weren't acknowledged as a sovereign group themselves. So they were arguing for civil rights and for incorporation. For tribal communities, they've always been acknowledged as having their own inherent rights, and those rights don't come from within the United States system. They come from without that system. But we've got a clear legal recognition of tribal groups, so it's harder to only focus on the individual. And it's also important to note that that recognition is not only based on race. And in 1974, in a case called Morton versus Mancari, the Supreme Court was clear on this. They said that when we say the word Indian, it means more than one thing. It means a certain biological descent often. It means a cultural affiliation. But it also has a political meaning. That is, a member of a federally recognized tribe. And so when we make distinctions based on Indian status, they are not always racial qualifications. And specifically when the federal government does it, they are distinctions based on a political status. And those distinctions are not subject to strict scrutiny, but are subject to a much lower level of judicial review called rational basis. And so when this case comes up, I think it's valuable when looking at ICWA to note first that ICWA distinguishes it only in part on race and in part on the political status of the individual, their eligibility for membership in a federally recognized tribe.
That was OU Law Professor Ty Helton discussing the Indian Child Welfare Act and what it could mean for the case Adoptive Couple versus Baby Girl, heard this last week by the Supreme Court. Bigfoot Creative is bringing an artistic flair to the opening night of the Norman Music Fest this Thursday by hosting a live paint at 7 p.m. at 315 East Main Street, featuring four local painters, Marwin Begay from the Navajo Nation, Hoka Skinnendor, who is Oneida and Ogallala, Rob Carter, and Tom Ferris, who is Oto Missouria and Cherokee. To support KGOU's native programming, you can go to our website, kgou.org, and donate online. I'm Susan Shannon for Indian Times, now in its fifth year.